Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello, I'm Lee Hutchison, host of Filibuster, and I'm joining you for a little special announcement before we kick off today's episode. If any of you follow us on social media, you'll have recently seen that we've been hit by a legal claim. Fortunately, we can't go into the specifics of the amount, but what they're asking for is less than it would cost to go to court, and they know that. But the Nerd Party is a not-for-profit, and it's just a group of nerds like myself, Tristan, Matt, Mike, everyone, just talking about nerdy things. We unfortunately don't have insurance for something like this, and we need your help to fight this and to battle this predatory legal practices that have hit us. This could happen to anyone. If you're listening and you've got a podcast, it could easily happen to you. If you're a listener of podcasts, it's very possible that your favourite show could be hit with something like this. The amount we're asking for will help go towards fighting that battle. But every cent, dollar, anything will go towards that legal cost. A lot of you have listened to the Nerd Party for several years, and we've never asked for anything like this before. Usually we just ask for a share of or a like on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, whatever. But today we're asking for something a bit more than that. So anything that you can donate, please go to gofundme.com/thenerdparty and use the hashtag TNPFight to spread the word. Help us out. It will truly make a difference. Now, enjoy the show.
Let the filibustering begin.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to Filibuster here on the Nerd Party Network. We're now on to our seventh issue in our prelude to Infinity War series. I'm Lee Hutchison and I'm joined by two amazing people from across the Nerd Party Network. Daniel Prue from SETI Alpha 3. Hello, Daniel.
Hello, I'm very excited to be here.
Yeah, this is your second issue, as it were.
Is.
I think it
yep,
is.
Yep, it is.
What? Yeah, I think you did. Was it the first Thor and Iron Man 2?
Yes,
it?
Thor and Iron Man 2. Yep.
Oh well, you've been rewarded with a bit of an improvement with the quality
so.
Of these movies. Yeah. And Matt, and I'm joined by Matt Hansen, so it shouldn't be a surprise if there's a Marvel discussion to be had that Matt Hansen is involved. So welcome back, Matt.
Yes, this is my third issue. So I was on for the Captain America First Avenger, Avengers, and then I was just on for Age of Ultron and Ant-Man.
Yeah, so I'm very surprised that you weren't on the Winter Soldier episode. I feel that if there was Captain America movies to be discussed, that you would be the man all over them.
Well, I needed a week.
Absolutely. Well, you know, you're here, and obviously you're probably well known as not just a Marvel fanboy, but a Captain America Steve Rogers fan. So in this issue, we'll be discussing Captain America Civil War and Doctor Strange, which kickstarted the third phase of kind of the Marvel movies. Where we're going to be talking just now as they're as we speak, they're doing the Marvel Infinity War fan event down in London. So I've got a mutual friend in Dallas, my co-host on Filibuster. We've got a mutual friend that's down at that event just now, so it looks like they've managed to assemble quite a lot of the cast there. So we've also assembled quite a lot of the cast here in this first movie. So Matt, you're the Captain America Civil War fanboy. Do you want to give people a brief plot synopsis of the movie that kickstarted this third phase?
Sure. It's kind of funny because, I mean, this was like one of the movies that we already did a show on like 2 years ago. So Nerd Party was around at this time. So following from the events of Age of Ultron, we have the new Avengers who are working as a cohesive team but make a very costly mistake during a mission in Nigeria that leads to the drafting of the Sokovia Accords, which says that the Avengers can only be called on if a UN panel says so. And Tony Stark is in support of this for his penance post-Ultron, but Steve Rogers is very much against it after he saw what government corruption could do in Winter Soldier. Add to that in the mix a possible assassination plot by Bucky Barnes, and we have ourselves a civil war.
Absolutely. So, Matt, you kind of touched upon it. We actually have discussed this about 2-3 years ago. We discussed this. So I think if people have been following us all those years, they probably know our feelings quite well on this. But Daniel, you know, this is your first time touching on this movie. So I'd love to know, firstly, when did you first see this movie? What was your kind of expectations going in and then coming out?
Yeah, so I first saw this movie like I see all Marvel movies on opening day, and then subsequently about 100,000 times. I love Civil War. It's one of my favorite of the Marvel films. We get the fantastic introductions of Spider-Man and Black Panther in it. Of course, the famous airport scene where we get Giant Man, which is awesome as well. There's just so much fun stuff in Civil War. And I've been rewatching it probably once every a few weeks, I'd say at this point, just in preparation for Infinity War. So I love this film, even though there's some shortcomings, there's some issues I have with it. But for the most part, it's just a wild ride from start to end.
So Matt, I think if I recall correctly, you had quite a bit of an experience watching this one for the first time. What was your kind of expectations going in? What was your opening night experience, and what did you think coming out of it?
Well, again, it's like a very interesting experiment. Listeners can actually go back and hear what my expectations were from 2 years ago, because it's all I talked about on here. But I was really excited. I was a huge fan of Winter Soldier, and it's still my favorite Marvel movie. This comes as a very close second, but I was very much excited to see what the Russo brothers would do with their hands on more of the Avengers, and the theater experience for this was unlike anything I've really done before. So I actually went to the all-day Captain America marathon. So I saw first Avengers, Winter Soldier, Age of Ultron, and then Civil War at 7 o'clock. So I was there at 8, and I saw the movie finally at, like, 7. But it was time well spent, and just to give you an indication of, A, how crazy I am, and B, how much I love the movie, when the 7 o'clock marathon showing was over, I went downstairs in the movie theater, bought another ticket, and saw the 10:30 showing. Same night.
Well, I think that sort of sums up perfectly what you thought of it. For me, I kind of went through a similar thing as you, Matt. I went to the Captain America all-day event, but with somewhat of a slight twist. I was pretty excited going into this movie because I'm a fan of the comic book Civil War, written by a fellow Scott Mark Miller. So it was an adaptation I was pretty excited for, and I almost had it in my head that it would be ideal as sort of a 4 or 5 movie sort of phase in itself. But everything about the trailers and the Russos coming back from Winter Soldier had me more than excited. So I went along to this Captain America all day. It started with the first Avenger, into Avengers, then Winter Soldier, Age of Ultron, and then it was going to end with the new movie at midnight. The all day of the event I was at was going to end with like a 3D screening, which just didn't hold any appeal for me whatsoever, and I wanted to see an IMAX first and foremost. So I had a ticket to the IMAX midnight event at a cinema all the way at the other side of town. So thankfully, Age of Ultron ended at like 10 past 11, rushed on the bus, took it all the way across town, and got in for like 10 to midnight and sat down in my favorite seat in the IMAX to watch the movie. And I came out and I was just really impressed. There was just so many wonderful surprises, and I just really liked how the movie peaked, and then it just went into a nice slow small scale movie in that third half. So I came out of it, I'd probably say it's definitely in the top three of the Marvel movies for me. So Daniel, you obviously touched on it. It's a movie you love. What are some of the kind of standout moments for you?
I mean, the biggest thing, of course, and this is going back in time because it has less impact now, but the introduction of Spider-Man was obviously massive. After Marvel got Sony to play nice with the Spider-Man character, and we got to see him, that was really the big expectation, the big moment going into the film that I was looking forward to, and I thought that it was awesome the way they did it. Of course, we had the trailer with the taking the shield moment, but everything around that was still good, even though you could kind of see and feel how it was maybe slightly tacked on, like this was something that was they put in at the end once they finally secured those rights. You can kind of get that feeling. It could have been easily cut if they wanted it to, but of course that was such a massive, awesome introduction to the MCU Spider-Man, and that is by far one of my favorite parts, and I'm really excited about his character coming in Infinity War too.
I think that it does. It is a little bit of a side story, but I think it's fit in with the main plot. You know, I think it's better than Thor takes a bath in Age of Ultron.
Certainly, certainly. Yeah.
So what did you think of this Spider-Man introduction, Matt?
I was blown away, because when Spider-Man got shared back with Marvel, I was happy, but at the same time I was like, well, it's not really needed. Spider-Man needs this universe more than this universe needs Spider-Man. But when I saw him interacting with everybody for the first time, I realized, oh, this is, I didn't realize how much I wanted this in this universe. So, yeah, I mean, and they kept him just to a perfect amount. He's maybe in 15 or 20 minutes of the movie, and that was a perfect teaser for his film that came later that I also ended up really loving.
I always remember the main gripe towards this movie kind of coming out was like, do we really need another Spider-Man? We've had two in as many years, we've had two actors in as many years as well, do we really need a third iteration of it? And it was always one of those things, I trusted Marvel that they always hoped something
well,
like this would
that's,
happen.
Well, that's the thing is, like, with Marvel, like, we've learned to stop asking, do we really need a Guardians movie, do we really need an Ant-Man movie? Whenever you ask, do we really need X for Marvel, they show you why you do need it.
And I think for me, the highlight of Spider-Man was, in fact, Peter Parker, that it really makes a difference having a genuine teenager play a teenage character, yeah, as radical as that was. And I think the scenes with him and Aunt May and Tony Stark and him in that scene in the bedroom was more kinky than it actually was. Those were some of my favorite moments in the scene. And I always remembered one thing I always associate with that, you know, clip of, well, moment of them together, and if I'm ever watching with friends, is that there was a thing that came out, was like, Peter Parker has more lines in this movie than Superman had in Batman v Superman, the other big Clash movie at that time. That's my favorite go-to bit of trivia.
That's great. And what I liked mostly about Spider-Man, this version, is that I feel like this version, Tom Holland, is the first one to get both personas right, because I felt like Tobey Maguire was a great Peter Parker and an okay Spider-Man, and Andrew Garfield was a great Spider-Man and an okay Peter Parker. Here, Tom Holland is both a great Peter Parker and a great Spider-Man.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. One thing I'm curious about, Daniel, with this movie, that one of the, you know, there's sometimes Marvel gets accused of not having perhaps the most exciting of action sequences or things like that, and villains as well. What was your take on the, you know, the big action set pieces in this movie, and our villain of the piece, Zemo?
Yeah, well, I mean, they kill Crossbones right away, so that's well, allegedly, right? So that's that was fine with me. And then Zemo, I really, really like Zemo. You know, obviously his motivation made a lot of sense. You can kind of the whole piece with him and the cell phone, the recording that you're not aware that it's his dead wife, you know, throughout the film until the end. That's good. It's smart. And I liked. He felt like he was just a desperate man, just trying to do this thing in revenge. And then obviously he attempts to kill himself at the end of the film. It doesn't work out for him. I hope we get more Zemo. I don't know what kind of form that would take at this point, especially since we don't really know what's going to happen in post Infinity War. But I think he was a compelling villain, and he wasn't, you know, his plot wasn't super, he wasn't a super comic booky character in so much. And he just wanted to tear them apart, and he thought the best way to do it was from inside. And of course, his plan worked really well. I mean, you know, he succeeded. Technically, the villain won this.
Yeah,
this
no,
film.
He won, yeah. Definitely.
So,
now, do you agree with that, Matt? That Marvel, sometimes rightly and wrongly, has this reputation of poor villains. Do you think Zemo was one of them? He seems to be put into that kind of pile of poor villains with kind of general reaction, or if they ever make lists of the top 20 villains in Marvel ranked, do you think he deserves that kind of lower rating or lower expectations from fans?
No, and I, from what I've been reading, like I think people have been putting him higher and higher. Really, Zemo kind of kicks off phase three, and, you know, maybe again I'm biased, but I would say phase three has probably had Marvel's best villains. And he's definitely one of them. Like Daniel said, he's just a guy, and he's, you know, he actually you know, he does things that are reprehensible, but they're understandable. And, I like his final confrontation with Cap and Tony at the end.
Yeah, like, I'm the same as you two. I am a huge fan of Zemo. I mean, Daniel Brühl is just one of my favorite European actors, and when he was put into this movie, I was immediately excited. And, like, I totally agree with what you were saying, Daniel. Like, he doesn't need to do much. He just needs to pull a few strings here and there to make his plan come together, that he just needs to push people in the right direction, and it all kind of comes crumbling down, that when we're kind of going into this Infinity War, some things are still kind of unresolved in between sort of Captain America and Iron Man, things like Ant-Man and the Wasp. Obviously, it seems to be look like it's going to be a sort of a prequel to Infinity War, where we've still got the Ant-Man on the run as well. So there's certainly going to be a lot of fallout from his actions. And I just like how when it gets to that moment where we're building to this moment here in Siberia or something, where it's like, right, here are all these kind of Winter Soldier-like creatures. Right, he's going to unleash them and chaos is going to reign. In reality, it's like, why would I want more of you? He just wants to bring them all together and crush them. And I think that's just brilliant. There's a confidence in that where it's like, we don't need to make the villain big. And it just gets smaller and smaller, that movie. And it almost feels like as soon as Ant-Man goes big, they decide, right, we're just going to start scaling down this movie, and it's going to make a nice intimate climax. No blue light in the sky, no huge clash across the stars. It's something small, and it's just two people essentially beating each other in the end. And I really love that.
It's a great sequence where you're building the audience has this expectation now that we're going to go fight these super soldiers, that he's going to unleash all these super soldiers. And it's very, like, kind of expected traditional, or it's something that you would think that this movie would do. And they have this awesome location in Siberia and this hidden base and stuff. And then the movie completely subverts that expectation. And like you said, it's not like that at all. It's just, instead of this ginormous awesome battle or whatever with these super soldiers, it's like, no, there's this small revelation which flips everything on its head. And I agree, that's one of the best parts of the film.
What's your eagle eye then, Matt, as obviously kind of Captain America fan? When you watch this movie, that there was obviously a potential tension with fans or worries going in that, well, this is a Captain America movie, but you've got the man who essentially kickstarted the Marvel Cinematic Universe. You've got a powerhouse like Robert Downey Jr. who could easily, you know, overpower a character like Steve Rogers and Chris Evans. Did you have that worry going in? And then did you feel that Captain America, you know, this was his movie, or did you feel it was maybe a bit of both?
No, I didn't have that fear going in. I knew that I've been watching the interviews with the Russos, and they earned a lot of goodwill from me on Winter Soldier. And what I like about this movie specifically is that, yes, Tony is a major player. The other Avengers are supporting players. But really, the main driving action of this movie the story wouldn't progress without Captain America and what he ends up doing in the film. So I do consider this, you know, while it's, you know, Captain America and the Avengers, I still consider it first and foremost a Captain America film.
What about for you, Daniel? What's your kind of relationship with Captain America? And did you feel that this film was a true tribute to Captain America? We know him in the first movie as someone that takes orders. Do you feel that sort of the journey he takes to essentially rebelling against orders was something that kind of paid off?
So I'm not a huge Cap fan. In fact, I'm a massive Iron Man fan. So literally, we may in fact have a civil war here right now. No, I kid. But so I do see it more of a Avengers 1.5 kind of a thing, or I guess it would be 2.5 at this point. It's kind of interesting to me because I, you know, as a Cap fan, Matt, I'm curious how you feel that like, I feel, not that, because it's not so black and white that one is right and one is wrong, but I think Steve made a tremendous mistake not telling Tony. So it's he kind of understand Iron Man at the end.
No, that's what the Russos always said, is they want you to go into this movie with your, you know, I was Team Cap, you were probably Team Iron Man. And the Russos' goal was not to say that Cap was right because it's his movie. The Russos' goal, they specifically said, was to let you leave the theater and questioning with yourself and among friends who was right. I think it's purposefully gray, and that's one of the things I like about the movie, is that Tony makes a lot of mistakes, but Steve's no angel either. The reason I just, you know, I tip it more to a Captain America movie versus an Avengers movie is, you know, it's summarized in one scene for me, basically, during the end battle, which is, you know, very personal and, you know, personal but high stakes. Steve comes full circle and, you know, does the whole I could do this all day thing that he did from First Avenger. So I thought that was just like a great arc for him.
So with you were saying, Daniel, you're a big Iron Man fan. When you heard that like Robert Downey Jr. was going to be in this movie and it was going to be Civil War, what was your kind of reaction to that news, and then how it all kind of transpired from an Iron Man perspective?
Yeah, I was excited, of course. I say put him in all the movies. You know, when he shows up in Homecoming, I was super excited about that as well. I'm like, yeah, more Iron Man is good with me. Yeah, it's tough because this movie... And of course, it's meant to do this, but it splinters the group. And, you know, the ending, of course, I see it more of a like Captain. It feels kind of out of character. And I can say this, but I'm not a huge Captain America fan, but it feels kind of out of character for the way, the extreme lengths that he goes to protect his friend when, for all he knows, I mean, his friend has done some terrible, awful things. He does need to be stopped. This seems like completely reasonable things. You know, and then, of course, the Accords also seem kind of reasonable to me. I don't know if we want to get into that or not. But so I kind of, maybe because of Iron Man, I side that way the whole way through. But it just seems to be, that's kind of the path of reason. And most of the people are going that way. And then there's just this, you know, Captain and a few others that are splintering off. But that's kind of how I see it.
Yeah, so let's kind of like dive into the Accords then. For me, I felt like I'm kind of in the midst of my Marvel rewatch. I haven't quite got to Captain America Civil War and Doctor Strange yet. But it makes sense for me, especially kind of how it almost seems to be since the first Avengers, when he had that sort of near-death experience and he had the anxiety that kind of sprung from that. It always seems to be, and it kind of, especially in Age of Ultron, it always seems to be about ending the fight, not being the one, you know, how do we kind of save everyone, how do we look after everyone. And I think especially when he has that encounter, and I think it's amplified especially when he meets the Alfred Woodard,
that's in a great scene,
the beginning of the movie, where it's just like, you know, this is the human cost of your actions. And I feel that sort of that has continued to build up over the movies, you know, the how, you know, we all see them have these fun adventures, but they have a human cost, and we see that in Iron Man 3 with him with this anxiety. We then kind of continue to see this sort of inspire. So the idea that sort of he becomes this character that's like, right, this is what keeps us in check, this is the way to perhaps end the war, that he's not the young whippersnappers that these other people are. Like, he's in a positive relationship for the most part, and I can see why someone like him would be, I don't want to keep this fight going forever. I can only do this for so long. He almost reminds me perhaps of Batman in The Dark Knight Rises. So it made perfect sense to me. I would take it that's maybe not the case for you, Daniel, is it?
No, I mean, I can definitely see... I'm sorry, I see Iron Man's side of it. It makes sense to me. Captain's side, to me, it doesn't make sense because he feels... I guess in light of the events of Winter Soldier... I would see where he would become cynical of these sort of governing bodies and kind of maybe be a little more reserved. But a lot of the movie, it feels like he's just like so extreme. Like when the hunt for Bucky starts, and he just like, you know, he of course they have that great chase scene when him and Bucky, and then Black Panther gets involved. I love that scene, by the way. I don't know. He seems to be going really extreme in his ways. He just feels like the unreasonable one to me in the movie.
But it got personal for him, which I think makes anyone take questionable actions. And I think that the events of Winter Soldier were big enough that, he has real second thoughts about government fidelity and non-corruption. But Lee, going back to what you said, I mean, you characterized, you know, Tony changing in from his experience in Avengers, but really Tony, from the moment of Iron Man 1 all the way back in 2008, his arc is that he's always a character who is trying to do penance for past wrongs. Mm-hmm. So in Iron Man 1, he becomes Iron Man because he's, you know, horrified at what his weapons ended up doing. And then you follow that through to Avengers and then Iron Man 3, where he, you know, he's horrified that some of the things that he's done as Iron Man is bringing these bigger threats. So what does he do? He creates Ultron so that those threats can be countermanded. But then Ultron goes insane and ends up destroying a city. And then you get the beginning of this film where that action led to the death of, you know, Alfred Woodard's son and a whole bunch of others. So now his penance is, well, these accords will absolve him of the wrongdoing that he did in the past and allow him to go forward. But that ends up splintering the group. So now it'll be interesting to see where it picks up in Infinity War. You know, maybe he's taking it on, you know, okay, I destroyed the group, so maybe now I'm going to, like, try to get ready for this threat myself so I don't have to get anyone else involved or killed. I don't know. I'm guessing. But he's always a man who's doing penance.
Yeah, and I think that you see it in, like, Age of Ultron as well, when he has that sort of vision, like, of all his friends surrounding dead, Captain America's shield broken. And the idea that we sort of look at that and we think this could be the shape of things to come when Thanos eventually comes to town. And whether, the failure of Ultron, the Accords failure, whether those things, you know, dare I say, could have protected the Earth and the Avengers from their fate, it remains to be seen. But it always seems that, you know, when Thanos comes to town, it's going to be those fears and anxieties have come home to roost, that Captain America saw something like this coming, and it was about, how do we make sure that we are protected, and how do I make my friends safe, how do I keep them alive?
And plus, from Cap's perspective, I agree it goes to extremes once his friend gets involved, and I think that makes sense. But you have to remember Steve as a character, too, who always wants to do the right thing and lives to help other people, so much so that in Winter Soldier, when Falcon asks him what makes him happy, he genuinely doesn't know, you know, what he wants to do personally, except help other people. So I can imagine him not, you know, as in addition to not being happy with the government, for him to see, like, a situation go down, like he says in the film, and then be held back by a government to a government body who gets to vote on whether or not he can go save people from a crumbling building. Yeah, I think knowing who he is, he definitely doesn't want to go along with that.
So I'd love to know one thing as well. This movie does so much introducing of different elements and bringing back older elements. What were your reaction to now? I think it's, I could be wrong, but it's now the second highest grossing movie of all time? Something along those lines?
Black Panther? Just crossed Titanic today, I think.
Domestic. I think Titanic is still number two. Force Awakens is number three. This goes down a while, but domestically, yes, it's beaten Titanic.
This episode is, like, recorded 8 days before we're released, so if on the day this episode is released it's now made it to number one in the world or whatever, we'll be out of date. But so I'm curious, what did you think of Black Panther when he was first introduced, Daniel?
Awesome introduction. Another character that I'm not super familiar with from other media, I mean, you know, tangentially aware, but he's done really well. Of course, it's kind of hard to, like, look at it now without the foreknowledge of Black Panther, but the character was done really well. I thought his arc throughout the movie made a lot of sense. He goes through a lot here. This is kind of a mini origin for him. And he's super important to the plot. So he feels, whereas Spider-Man kind of felt like it could have been there or not, Black Panther feels baked into this story, and I think he adds a lot to the entire narrative that goes on here.
What about for you, Matt? What was your expectations of the Black Panther?
I totally agree. I mean, I wasn't super familiar with him, but like I said, I think back on our Avengers 1 podcast, after that film, I became a huge Marvel fan, and I started watching the Earth's Mightiest Heroes cartoon that was on air at the time, and Black Panther was in that. So I knew kind of who he was, but I wasn't that familiar with him. I love the fact that we just get his origin out of the way, and he already has a pretty like complete arc by the time that this film is over, so that when, you know, he gets his solo film, like we ended up seeing, like, we don't have to waste time with that. We could just jump right into the action and see him progress as a character.
Absolutely, and now I think the whole world knows who Black Panther is as it continues to break records and we kind of pass away. And I think we've seen it in a lot of the publicity and ad campaign for Infinity
War.
Well,
I mean,
there seems to be a lot of Black Panther presence.
Just yesterday, they released a TV spot that had a lot more Wakanda and Black Panther and Okoye in it. So yeah, they're capitalizing on it.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So does anyone have any kind of closing thoughts on Captain America Civil War before we move on?
Still holds up. Very, very good film. Sets the stage for Infinity War nicely, and I still think 2 years on it's ranks as number 2 in my Marvel Cinematic Universe rankings, just behind Winter Soldier, only because that story is a little bit more tight. But it's amazing what the Russos are able to do with so many characters, and yet it doesn't feel like a mess. So that's why when people are nervous about the amount of characters in Infinity War, I trust them to do it.
Or they've never seen Arrested Development and seen how they could juggle all those characters and all the Bluth family members in a 22-minute episode. Like, this is nothing for them. As I say this right now, the person I know that's at this premiere is sat right next to the Russo brothers as they're watching the cast go on stage. I'll give them a wee pat on the shoulder to tell them to check out this podcast.
And, yeah, check out this podcast so that you can hear me say I hate your friend.
And what about yourself, Daniel? Any kind of closing thoughts on Civil War?
Yeah, I would echo what Matt said. I love this film. It is amazing, and it's really interesting that it's kind of this old, and we have so many threads from from Civil War that have not been resolved yet. Like, we still don't really know what's going on with Captain America, or most of the rest of the Avengers. Everything that's taken place in between Civil War and now has been kind of side stories now, you know, with Black Panther and Spider-Man. It's really interesting, where it's kind of a really interesting point in Marvel Cinematic Universe fandom where we are still up in the air about all this stuff. So I'm really excited to see how all of this stuff pays off on the big screen. You know, there's going to be a big moment between Cap and Iron Man at some point in that film, or maybe the following film. I want to see how all of this stuff that has been laid here as a groundwork ends up on the big screen. I'm very excited for that stuff.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because one of the criticisms that I thought was ridiculous about this film is that people seem to think that the issues are resolved by the end, and that Cap writing to Tony was sort of a let's bury the hatchet sort of thing. I don't think that anything's resolved by the end of this. Cap just extends an olive branch, say, hey, if you need me, call me.
Yeah.
But I don't see that as like, oh, we're just good friends again. And to your point, Daniel, I mean, if you're like me and you just study these trailers because I have nothing better to do with my life, when you see Tony standing in Doctor Strange's sanctum with Wong and Doctor Strange and Hulk, in his hand he's got the burner phone. He's got the burner. He looks like, I think it looks like the burner phone, but I think he's got the burner phone that Cap gave him. So we may see that again.
Interesting.
Well, if you ever need, like, as everyone kind of has picked up on some filibusters before, Matt is a lawyer. So with that eagle eye, if you've got a 20-page contract or a 1,000-page document that needs examined, Matt Hansen is clearly the man for you. So let's dive into Doctor Strange then. Daniel, do you want to give people a bit of a brief synopsis of this first movie featuring Doctor Strange?
Sure. So Doctor Strange is a brilliant surgeon, and he a bit arrogant, you could say. That's an understatement, by the way. He undergoes a terrific car crash, which cripples his hands, And through much pain and anguish, he tries to fix it using Western medicine to no avail. So he decides to look for some alternative medicine. And that's the whole plot of this film. That's it. That's all that happens. No, I'm kidding. I kid. Kidding, of course.
So, Daniel, then, I want to know again, what was your kind of expectations going into this movie? How did you see it for the first time, and what did you think coming out of it?
So, Doctor Strange is interesting. As far as the character goes, like Thor, originally, I kind of felt his character is silly and goofy, and how do you do this in a movie? And like Thor, it mostly works. Marvel finds a way to make it mostly work. I didn't know too much about Doctor Strange other than he was, you know, super awesome magic dude. And by the end of the film, he becomes super awesome magic dude, so that's good. But I like this film. It's not perfect, and there's a lot of criticism that goes around about how it's basically Iron Man with magic instead of tech. And I can understand that argument. I would say this, to me, mirrors more of Ant-Man, where I kind of went in with lower expectations and then came out just having fun. This movie has a lot of really interesting visuals and interesting plot elements that are a little different than what you may have expected going in. So I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. And I liked Doctor Strange, even though he's a huge, massive jerk. But at the end, at least he learns his lesson, so...
So talking about someone that's not a massive jerk, Matt Hansen, what did you think of Doctor Strange? What was your expectations going in? How did you see it for the first time? And what did you think coming out?
I really had no expectations. I mean, I've learned to trust Marvel at that point. They made me love the Guardians. They made me love Ant-Man. So I figured that I would at least have a good time watching this film. And then I unfortunately, because of my schedule at the time, and it was my first semester of law school, I really only got to see this film once when it was in theaters. But I went to the IMAX 3D because I heard the visuals were awesome, and yeah, they were awesome. And it's not, like Daniel said, it's not a perfect film, but it's a really fun film, good introduction, moves at a fast pace. You know, it's just under 2 hours, so it's, you know, it's perfect timing. And I think that post this film, I really love Cumberbatch as Strange. I love the supporting cast that he has, and I see great potential for it. So I'm, you know, not only looking forward to his stuff in Infinity War, but, you know, Doctor Strange 2 and how much they can expand on it. But good start here.
Yeah, like my expectations going in was, it was probably similar to you. I mean, Doctor Strange isn't a character I know too well, and kind of going in, I was quite excited because I remember, like, Scott Dickerson, I thought, was a really interesting choice to direct, and the Cumberbatch casting got me particularly excited. I remembered Joaquin Phoenix was linked with the role, and that got me real excited, but I never in a million years expected him to actually take the role. Yeah, I think he gets linked to all these roles.
I mean, and I think, who knows, he might be the Joker.
That's never going to happen. Like, if anyone associates Joaquin Phoenix with these sorts of Marvel movies, you could give him, like, an incredible role, say, this is it. But I don't ever see him as the type of person that wants to sign up to a 2-year, 3-year franchise deal. He doesn't strike me at all as that type of actor. And that's not saying that he's pretentious or looks down on these things. I just don't think he's that type of actor. So when Cumberbatch was cast, I was excited. I actually went to see him in Hamlet. It was the last day that he was performing in that role before the play finished, and I think like 3 days later, me and my mate that went to see the play, we saw pictures of him with this fake beard on out in Asia, and it was like, oh yeah, I saw that guy just 2 days ago on stage. So we were quite excited going into the movie, and I think I came out of it and I thought, considered it a bit of an enjoyable romp. It is like that Ant-Man in a way that you go in and you think, yeah, I really enjoyed that. That was a good film. It doesn't have to be all these sorts of, it's all connected to all these different things. I watched it, enjoyed it, went home, had a smile on my face. Sometimes that's all I ask of a movie, and I think Doctor Strange delivered in that. I think it has a somewhat unfair reputation I think it definitely wastes Mads Mikkelsen.
Yeah.
That's a disappointment. I think it definitely wastes Michael Stuhlbarg. I'm probably getting his last name wrong there. But I like the... I must say I'm a big fan of the resolve to the movie where he just time loops over and over again. And I just find that to be clever and nice way to end a movie. And, you know, a second Marvel movie in a row which doesn't resort to sort of the big action set piece. It's sort of... something clever and something different.
Yeah, if you want my favorite part of this movie or my favorite scene, it's summed up in 5 words, Dormammu, I've come to bargain.
It's such an awesome and clever sequence. It's done so well. And it also kind of endears you to Strange. He becomes... It's like an ultimate culmination of everything he's learned up to that point. He's using what he's learned in his past life and then what he learned in his new life in a kind of unorthodox sort of way. And you can see why this character is going to be become super important and to the wider Marvel universe.
One thing I'd like to ask you, kind of aside from sort of the what we see on the screen, is one of the big discussions we see about Marvel movies all the time, and it seems to kind of be almost on par with how people discuss the villains, is that their scores are unmemorable, forgettable. I found this to have a fantastic score from Michael Giacchino. It sort of reminded me a bit of a Doctor Who kind of vibe. What was your thoughts on the soundtrack?
I love it. I kind of like the sitar influences too. I know that they're not instantly memorable the way like certain theme songs are, but I never bought into the whole Marvel doesn't have memorable music theory, especially with the Avengers theme. Which, you know, you notice that they're plastering that all over the adverts for Infinity War. So if it wasn't iconic, why are you using it?
Absolutely. What about for yourself, Daniel? What did you think of the score?
Yeah, it's good. It feels like it fits this kind of otherworldly, you know, universe that we're kind of going into at this point. So I enjoyed it as well. Yeah, I thought it was good.
So I'd love to know, like, Daniel, you said you came out of this movie enjoying it. What was it about the film that you particularly enjoyed? Was there any sort of characters, set pieces, moments that came out and you thought, I really like that, that was good?
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of elements. Like I said, I really enjoyed the climax of the film. This is another movie where you kind of expect a big battle to go down in the end with what you're assuming is the main bad guy, but then it's kind of a wrench in the works when you find out, oh no, there's something bigger behind the scene. And like you were talking, I liked most of the supporting characters. I feel like
Rachel McAdams.
McAdams, thanks. She is not super interesting or compelling in any way. I don't know, it felt like, okay, we need to have a love story, throw this on. I mean, it's not through any fault of her own, but I just don't have any connection to her character. It feels
I think she has potential. Unlike you know, someone like Kat Dennings in Thor, she has potential to go somewhere.
Hey, see, I really like
Kat Dennings in Thor, so shut your
I was just going to say, I like Kat Dennings.
Well,
but then
you got Thor 2, and she was just grating. Let's just say I wasn't missing her by the time we got to Ragnarok.
Well, I feel the same way about Natalie Portman.
Totally.
I'm glad that we got rid of that dead weight. But I liked Kat Dennings' character a lot. I hope she comes back. Anyways, so other than the romantic subplot, which was pretty generic, I really enjoyed the supporting characters. I liked Wong a lot. It's really interesting how much he is featured in the Infinity War promotional stuff. Like,
yeah.
It almost makes me kind of nervous that they're going to kill him off or something. Like, why is
if they're going to kill him off, my prediction is if they kill off any of the new characters, it's going to be like, everybody's dead. What do we do now to resolve this in Avengers 4? You know, because they're not killing off, especially their Phase 3 introductory characters, like, because we got sequels to make, so.
Yeah. It's just interesting to see. It's cool. I really like Wong as a character, and it's fun to see him there. But he's just like he's hanging out with Iron Man and Doctor Strange, and, well, obviously Doctor Strange, but and Hulk. And it's like, oh, okay. Well, I guess he's just a one of the guys now. But anyways, I liked the characters a lot. I even liked the Ancient One, Tilda.
Oh, I love Tilda Swinton.
She's so good in this film. She plays that sort of like mysterious, super ultra powerful mentor characters really well. And I thought she did a fantastic job. And so all of that sort of stuff was really good. That her and Benedict playing off each other, I thought was super, super good.
Now, you touch on Tilda Swinton's character there. Obviously, there was controversy, as there often is with these things, about, you know, that we've got this Asian character played by a white English woman. What did you take of that kind of reaction? Did you think it was warranted, but did Tilda Swinton sort of overcome sort of perhaps the negativity to deliver a good performance, or did you feel that, you know, someone else should have got the role perhaps?
I don't know the character well enough. I mean, I guess obviously I trust people when they say it's an Asian character, it should be played by an Asian person. I generally sort of agree with that sort of sentiment, like, yeah, why not? But she played the role really like super fantastic. I don't know who would have played it better. Not to say that there isn't somebody who would have, but I was okay with it just because I didn't know the character, and so I had no expectations of what the character should be going in. It was just a more of an ignorance thing, just because I don't know any better. But I thought that her performance was really well done, and so it was something I didn't, in the context of just the movie, you don't sort of think about that, and you're just kind of along for the ride.
What was your reaction to that, Matt?
Yeah, I really didn't care. I mean, here's the thing, is that I understand where they're coming from, but at the same point, if they had cast an Asian actor or someone who, you know, an Asian male, then you run the risk of, well, this is a stereotypical Asian wise man role. So, like, I think it's a lose-lose either way. So why not double down on your instincts and get just a great actress or actor? And Tilda Swinton was that. I mean, if you're going to talk about standout moments for me, aside from the climax, you know, the character moments with her, especially her last scene with Strange, mm-hmm. and when they're both in their astral forms and she's talking about, it's not about you, and here I am stretching out time so I can see the sunrise. That is probably my favorite scene in the whole film.
Yeah, yeah. It's really good.
Like, I think Scott Dickerson we wanted to change the character to an Asian woman, but felt that an older Asian woman might invoke the dragon lady stereotype, while a younger Asian lady would be perceived as exploiting Asian fetish and a fanboy's dream girl. So
see, kinda, like, it was all lose-lose, so just go with a good actor.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in the same camp as Daniel. I mean, it's just a character I don't know particularly well. There could have been someone better out there to play that role, perhaps in a race respect. But I think with what we got with Tilda Swinton, I thought she was excellent, and I always think she's fantastic in anything she really does. So I think it's a real get to have someone like her kind of cast in the movie.
I'm going to miss her. I hope she's a force ghost in Doctor Strange too.
Absolutely. So kind of, what about for yourself, Matt? What were some of your favorite moments of the movie, and what made it perhaps more than just another entry into the Marvel movie? What made it an enjoyable one for you?
It's those character moments. It really is. The stuff with Tilda Swinton, even some of the stuff with Rachel McAdams. I really like the confrontation that she and Strange have near the beginning of the film, where he's just frustrated and lashes out at her. That's why I see that, you know, even though she's not super interesting part of this film, I see that there's potential for something better if they could find the right kind of thing for her. But really, the visuals are great. I love the different kinds of fighting that goes on, where things are twisting, and it's Inception, but not really. What really makes this film for me is the stuff in between, the character moments, seeing Strange grow, seeing him interact with other people, even seeing his interactions with, you know, we haven't mentioned him yet, Mordo, Chiwetel Ejiofor, who's a great actor, and can't wait to see him come back as the villain.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was excellent.
Yeah, he was so good in, Serenity. It always brings me back to that. I agree with you, Matt, that there's a lot of really good character moments. There's just a lot going on for this film. It does feel like it's generally thought of as one of the more forgettable or maybe a lower tier Marvel film. I think maybe it doesn't get enough credit, because just watching through it last night, to prepare for this. It's just a lot of fun. You're just going to have a good time watching this film.
And sometimes that's just what going to the cinema is all about. I think with these things become so difficult because I don't know about yous, but when I rate a Marvel movie, for example, so whether when Infinity War comes out or this comes out, I don't almost go, right, I'm rating this movie compared to every other movie. I'm comparing it to the Marvel movies. So when I see something like Civil War, I'm thinking like, oh man, this could be like a 5 out of 5 movie here compared to the other Marvel movies. Perhaps in reality, it's maybe closer to a 4. So when I look at something like this, I think, yeah, this is a pretty enjoyable movie in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Perhaps it doesn't kind of get there in the top tier like Civil War, Winter Soldier, for example. But hey, it's still pretty enjoyable. These things become so difficult when it's an 18 plus movie series to rate them and kind of tier them and everything like that. You know, we discuss these things in comparison to everything else.
It's hard, but I think that, you know, my philosophy is unless you're a big event movie like Civil War or Infinity War or an Avengers film, I don't need, you know, the film to move heaven and earth and have major lasting consequences. I just need it to be good. And, you know, this is not an earth-shattering, like, this is going to change the Marvel Universe forever movie. It's just an introduction to a character that has a lot of potential. It's the same thing that I felt walking out of Ant-Man. And, you know, because Ant-Man had such a good introduction and a fun little bit in Civil War, I'm really looking forward to Ant-Man and the Wasp, you know, even more so. Mm-hmm. So I have a feeling that, you know, seeing Doctor Strange in here, seeing his little bit in Ragnarok and whatever he's going to do in Infinity War, I'll be looking forward to Doctor Strange 2 just as much.
Now, here's my kind of last main question to you guys, that obviously Marvel Phase 4 is kind of, it's all, we know we're getting a Guardians of the Galaxy and we're getting a Spider-Man movie, but it's all kind of cloak and dagger what we're actually getting because, you know, they really don't want to spoil the, you know, surprises and perhaps deaths that's going to come in Infinity War. Do you think we're going to get a Doctor Strange 2?
I have a feeling that, yes, I think we're going to get a Doctor Strange 2, and I have a feeling that once Infinity War's out, it'll probably be at Comic-Con when they announce their first bunch of lineups for Phase 4, and that's when I predict they're going to announce the Avengers 4 title, whatever it's going to be.
Yes, I would think so. What do you think, Daniel? What's the future for Doctor Strange?
Yeah, definitely a Doctor Strange 2. There's no doubt about it. I think he was going to be... I imagine, and this is my theory, that he was going to be the linchpin. He was going to be the Iron Man for Phase 4 and beyond. It seems now that that's pivoted
Black Panther.
Towards... Well, yeah, I can see Black Panther doing it, but they've kind of mentioned in passing that it's Spider-Man at this point. He is going to be the sort of anchor of all of the Marvel Universe. We'll see how it pans out, of course.
He might. I'm just saying, like, post almost 700 million domestic, it might be Black Panther.
Yeah, I can definitely see them shifting. But they said it was going to be Spider-Man. But I certainly don't think they're just going to... You know, Benedict is a big get. You know, he's a big actor. And he's a really interesting character, I think. We'll definitely see Doctor Strange 2, without a doubt, and I look forward to it. One quick thing too, that, you know, you were talking, Matt, about how you didn't expect, you know, every individual Marvel movie to change the foundation of the entire cinematic universe, and I agree with you. Like, Ant-Man didn't do that, and it was fantastic because of it. But this movie does, in fact.
With magic.
We get magic, which is
okay.
A game changer. I know you probably didn't think about that when you were saying it, but...
Well, Ant-Man, we get the quantum realm.
That's true. That's absolutely a good point, yeah. And, of course, that's going to come back, so you pay attention to that. But, yeah, we get magic, which is, you know, when Thor first came out, we got that whole space realm, you know, aspect of the Marvel Universe. Now we have magic, so this is... just a new way to introduce new characters and new elements to the universe. So this is awesome. It's definitely impactful, at least that way.
Yeah. I'm just saying, like, you know, no organizations fall, no one breaks up, one dies.
I totally agree with you.
So I want to ask you guys, like, you know, last question before we wrap up, that us three will be back together to discuss Infinity War in a few weeks' time. We'll be joined by Sean Eastridge for that one. I'm just curious, you know, we're like 2 weeks out kind of at time of recording for Infinity War. I just want to kind of just a couple of quick words. What's your kind of hype, excitement level at this stage, you know, as we're all kind of churning our way through our rewatches, you know, the trailers are starting to increase, you know, these fan premiere events are kicking off. What are you feeling, Daniel?
I would say hype level 10. I haven't felt this excited since the original Avengers trailer. Like that trailer, when it was Thor and Iron Man and Captain America in the forest there, that got me more excited for a film, I think, than I've ever been. Obviously, Ultron was... I was hyped for it, but it always kind of felt like, okay, this is just another Avengers movie now. Not to downplay it or anything, but this also is... This is an important moment now. Obviously, we're going to see the end of some character arcs, you know, depending on... We don't know, but up to three or four very important characters. Could be more, could be less, you know. But this is everybody. This is finally everybody that we've seen up to this point in the same film. I am so massively excited. I cannot wait. So hype level 10, I'd say.
Yeah,
Matt, I imagine you're just feeling pretty relaxed about this, laid back.
Oh, yeah. Nonplussed. No, I mean... What's the word or the term for, like, beyond dying? I don't know, but, like, I've already gotten my tickets for the opening night fan event so I could see it at 6 o'clock, an hour ahead of the 7 o'clock. You know, I'm planning on going with a bunch of law school friends the next day. Literally can't wait. I agree with Daniel. I was hyped for Age of Ultron, but really Age of Ultron... You know, minus, you know, Scarlet Witch and Vision and Quicksilver really didn't offer something that we hadn't seen before. It was just our favorite characters reuniting on screen, which was fun, but not novel. This feels novel, and this feels like it is going to be earth-shattering. So I'm really excited, and if you want to talk about character deaths, I still say my money is on Loki getting it in the first 5 minutes once he gives Thanos the Tesseract. I'm serious. I really think he's done.
I don't know.
I wouldn't be surprised. For me, I'm excited. I suppose my hype has been somewhat different because they've been filming here in my city. I'm excited to see the place I live and work in and commute through every day put up onto that big screen. I'm really excited for this movie, and it just, you know, it's been a while since I've felt like this about a movie, like, you know, a blockbuster movie. I'm really excited. I mean, at time recording, like in less than 2 days, I'm going to the Scottish fan event with five of my good friends. And
You're only going to see like 30 minutes of it, right?
Yeah. So we'll get 30 minutes of the footage. We'll get the Russo brothers, what's her name? Elizabeth Olsen. We'll have Paul Bettany. At this stage, we still do not know where the actual event is taking place. It is to be confirmed. So we're really excited. And I don't know at this time recording. By the time this episode drops, we'll know either way, but we're in contention to hopefully do some interviews or something like that, but we won't know until perhaps the day if we're going to be on that shortlist. So I'm hopeful. So I it'll be the case of the biggest blue balls really in the world watch this like 30 minutes of footage, and it's like, all right guys, that's enough for now, off you go back home and then see the movie in 2 weeks.
But so. I like that they're doing the marketing machine behind the big films has been really fun, and I like that they're only showing 30 minutes, and I love the whole thing that the Russo brothers posted the other day with like hashtag Thanos demands your silence.
It's so
yeah,
good.
Absolutely.
It's so good too, because if you remember when Civil War was being promoted, of course the airport scene was really the big thing that they teased, and we know now that the bigger part happens after that, and it's much like you were talking about, Lee, it's much quieter than that. So I trust these guys for the promotional, like they seem to care that people get spoiled or whatever. There's definitely a lot that we don't know. There's definitely a lot. It's not like some movies where you can kind of gather every plot point from the trailers. I think everything that we're seeing was very carefully picked, and we aren't going to get any of the really awesome bits. until the film actually releases.
So I mean, cool. To your point, Daniel, like Lee was saying, like a bunch of the TV spots are coming out now, but I've been watching them. They don't show anything new. Or if they show anything new, it's maybe a second or two, but it's mostly like the stuff we've seen recut. So they're being very careful with this.
So, obviously, we'll be back in a few weeks all together and with the addition of Sean to discuss Infinity War. So, I suspect that episode, that discussion with all four of us, could potentially last longer than the movie itself.
No, so, I was going to say, we'll be 2 hours and 30 minutes, just like the movie.
Absolutely. So, until then, if people wanted to tune in or listen to you and reach out to you on the internet, where would people be able to find you, Mr. Hansen?
You can find me on Twitter at mhansen0207, H-A-N-S-E-N, talking about all things nerdy. You can also go back and check me out on the, like I said, the Captain America 1, Avengers 1 episode, and then Age of Ultron, Ant-Man. And I'll actually be back before Infinity War. I will be on the Thor Ragnarok and Black Panther show.
Yeah, that'll be me, you, and Dallas, so that I look forward to that one. And what about yourself, Daniel? Where can people tune in and reach out to you until then?
People can find me on Twitter, at OneUpDan. That's the number one, not the word. And you can chat with me about why Iron Man is so much better than Captain America.
Well, I'm glad that you guys managed to resist a civil war for this one. It's been real magic talking about these two movies with you. So that's a wrap for us. So, Matt, do you want to take us out?
Yep. Until next time, Avengers disassemble.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.